Welcome to Inspiring Voices, a podcast series with influential women leaders, an inspiring initiative by EY's Women Fast Forward program, dedicated to women leading the way to inclusivity. We believe that there is a profound impact of small actions in driving monumental change, empowering individuals to spark collective change. Today, we are fostering an inclusive culture that unleashes women's potential, paving the way for societal evolution. We believe that there is a profound impact of small actions in driving monumental change, empowering individuals to spark a collective change. And if I were to say that a little further, together, you know, we are fostering an inclusive culture that unleashes women's potential, paving the way for societal evolution. So welcome, everyone. I'm Arvind Sethi, partner and national director of assurance practice in India at an Indian member firm of EY Global. And I'm thrilled to be your host for the third episode of this podcast series, dedicated to celebrating and sharing the journeys of accomplished women leaders and provide encouragement and inspiration to women beginning their journeys towards success. Come along on this journey of celebration and empowerment. Before we move forward with today's episode, it's really noteworthy that the marketing industry has seen a notable increase in female board representation, reaching almost 27% in 2023. While the number of female directors on boards nearly doubled from 2017 to 2023, the increase has been uneven across companies, driven by a select few exceeding the mandated quotas. As we move forward, let's take a closer look at these topics in the due course. Today, we are honored to have Shan Jain with us, an independent director at Shalimar Paints and Infra Market. With over three decades of experience across industry giants and startups, Shan has a track record of crafting strategies that drive growth and propel brands to success. Shan, it's a pleasure to have you on our show. With your extensive career and truly inspiring journey, I'm truly excited to delve into your insights and experiences. Thank you for joining us today.
Hey, thank you, Arvind. I am also delighted to be here and share my insights with your audience. Let's go.
Yeah, excellent. So Shan, what I thought, you know, I will compel our discussions into three segments, maybe starting off with strategic leadership and brand growth, and then moving into, you know, corporate governance and board experiences. And the last, you know, we could be delving more into empowerment and personal mastery, so that, you know, we cover a broad spectrum of experiences that you have been through.
Yeah, so, that makes sense.
Yeah. So I'll start off with the first question in the segment, leadership and brand growth. Shan, your career has spanned some of the most iconic companies in the world. So I was a bit intrigued and I was very impressed. Can you in this process share with us the key lessons that you've learned from these experiences and how they have shaped your approach to strategy and growth?
Yeah, Arvind, great question. Actually, and no doubt, iconic companies have taught me very invaluable lessons. You know, I've been part of plenty of them over the last three decades. The influence of these multinationals is truly instrumental in maturing Indian businesses and exposing them to the global best practices. And if you look at it, it has flipped the sides with the Indian giants today, you know, like Tata, Infosys, Mahindra and Mahindra, Dr. Reddy, AVGs, to name a few, how they are now expanding globally instead of the other way around. So surely they have taught very invaluable lessons to all of us to, you know, delve into specifically what I have learned in my career journey. I would say there is a complete customer obsession as something that is, you know, a common thread across all Iconic companies. You need to be able to literally walk in the shoes of your customer and be able to understand their, you know, ways of interacting with your category. So that's one thing that they all do. And that is a core of their strategy. Then the other thing, and I'll talk more from a marketing perspective, is that the strategic view that marketing is an investment and not a cost. I think this is one big differentiator. You know, if I were to go back to the earlier days when I was coming into working and in the corporate world, computers used to be looked at as a cost, right? You used to be like, let's have one computer or two computers. But today it's an enabler. And today everybody understands that without computers, there is absolutely no way that you can progress and, you know, you have to be connected and all. So it's pretty much the same thing. It's like marketing is an investment and not a cost, which is where it moves in the P&Ls of various companies. Other than that, I would say that balancing, you know, performance marketing with brand building is another very big differentiator and something I've learned. There are other things like systematic data-driven approach, and which of course ensures precision and effectiveness. So my career actually underscores all these things, and I continuously learn, apply, and share this knowledge. Ultimately, it's all about, you know, leveraging all these insights and understanding the core reasons why some companies do better than others, for you to be able to drive strategy growth and make marketing powerhouses for the business successes.
Oh, amazing, amazing. I think some very good lessons that you shared with us. I think what really stood out for me is the customer-first approach. I mean, we are in the market because of the customers, right? And especially that phrase that you said, that marketing is investment and not a cost, is so, so very important, especially when you're building brands for the future. Right, absolutely. So I think given that background, and as a consultant specializing, and you did speak about digital transformation and, you know, digital data, what do you see as the most critical elements for brands to succeed in this era of digital era?
You know, interesting, Arvind, when I tell you about what are the critical success elements, they're going to sound like you heard them all and, you know, what's the big difference and how are they critical if everybody knows about it. But so what I'm going to do here is to tell you the insights that lead to these factors becoming critical success factors. Okay. So one of the biggest success factors in the digital era is a omni-channel presence and a hyper-personalization of content. Okay, these are like phrases which are used very loosely and they are used all the time, you know. But let me tell you how it makes sense. So today, you know, digital has become a medium that forms a bridge between lean back and lean forward state of discovery. And I'll explain this a little bit to you. Lean back is when you are you know, just sort of in a relaxed state and there's information which is coming to you and you're absorbing that information. Lean forward is a state of discovery where you are actively now seeking information. So you go into the search mode. Okay. Now earlier, lean forward state of discovery was sort of satisfied by families and friends. You know, if you wanted to find out something about somebody, first you'll talk to your family and friends, the closest form of influencing or influencers. Or you'd look at trusted magazines, or, you know, you'll actually go into a shop and you'll search for the information. Today, digital has become that medium, right? So whenever I am looking for something or anybody is looking for something, the first thing they'll do is to go onto their digital medium and look for information there, anywhere. I mean, there are various places that you can look at. So today, when the customer needs something, they don't call you. They search online. Okay, this is a very big, interesting shift that has happened. I don't need to remember the brand. I don't need to remember anything. I need to know my need state The other thing is about democratization of availability. Okay, again, another thing that we use quite often when we explain to our clients. But let's say as a follow-up to the earlier point, availability has to be democratized across as many platforms as possible. When I talk about that, what I'm trying to say is you need to be able to do transactions on the digital medium on your own website, on various forms of e-commerce websites. You should be able to do it on with social commerce, basically depending on your category needs. And why I say this, because consumers feel safe if your product is available on many marketplaces, because some places they'll review you, some places they might buy you, and some because the return policy is better. Okay, so here the insight is that we as consumers still approach digital medium with a little bit of suspicion. As much as convenience is there, but there is still a little bit of suspicion. And because there's no human interface, building trust is done by widespread availability. Because the more places you are available to buy, sort of the consumer feels safer and more confident in their purchase decisions. So that's why democratization of availability is another very, very crucial factor for success. And last but not the least, there is one last thing I want to talk about, which is blending category insights from cross-category experiences. And let me explain this with the help of an example. So consider how hospitality industry actually has taken cues from tech companies, right? Very divergent, but today, any hotel, like maybe I know Marriott and I know Hilton have done this. They've implemented digital check-ins and personalized room settings based on your previous stays. You look at Netflix, how Netflix remembers your viewing preferences, or Spotify remembers your music preferences. It's much like that. So you leverage the insights from the tech industry into hotel industry for a more personalized and seamless experience, so that you are able to enhance your customer satisfaction and loyalty even further. So while there is the hospitality industry, which has its own category insight, what they are trying to do is to match up their customer experiences on the digital medium based on what is the highest common factor across the digital experiences of the consumer on other categories. And then you kind of bring that together, and this again becomes a crucial success factor. Right? So I think with that, I would say that as digital specialists, we all say these things, but if you really understand the insights behind each of these reasons why they are being recommended, then you'll end up doing all of it. What happens right now is people don't know the reasons, and so they do some of some or some of all, and then there is a break in the loop from discovery to purchase,
No, I think very valid points, and I think you spoke about hospitality industry, and I myself have experienced that, the concept of mobile keys being done on Bonvoy is so very true. Yeah, I think the net messaging being that, the absence of human interface is there now, which earlier you said you could call up your friend or a family. Now is search online, and I think that's why it's so important to have an omni-channel presence. And the way Amazon has, converted the entire space is amazing. Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah. So that was very, very interesting. I think pivoting into our segment two, which I wanted to touch upon corporate governance and board experiences that we've been through. And specifically, Sean, with your role as an independent director at Shalimar Paints and also Infra Market, how do you, typically approach corporate governance, and what practices do you advocate for effective board leadership? If you can throw some light on that.
Yeah, so Arvind, as an independent director, of course, fiduciary oversight is the core of any, of governance approach. That is absolutely something that is a mandatory. So you have to ensure that all decisions are made in the best interest of the company and its shareholders. and you have to maintain the highest standard of integrity and ethical behavior. Like, that's an unwritten rule. I mean, that's the reason why you're there, right? However, just to say how the flavor of, you know, how my flavor changes the approach to corporate governance or adds to it, it's also shaped by my experience in marketing, right? So I understand the fact that marketing and branding plays a role in how you engage with stakeholder engagement and, you know, brand reputation management. Since I understand that, I advocate for transparent communication with customers, with employees, with shareholders. And I ensure that our marketing strategies are aligned with the core values and the long-term goals. This is something that, because you understand the depth of it, you need to kind of bring it into the foreplay at the governing body level and at the board level. So, you know, by directing a strong positive brand image, you will always enhance the trust and the loyalty amongst the stakeholders. So that's something in addition to the fiduciary roles that I do bring. Of course, being a woman, there is always that addition of empathy that comes in as my role. And so, yeah, those are some of the practices that I advocate for.
No, I think very, very true. And, you know, even my experiences have been that the board members are very engaged and, as you said, contributory as well. And I think the underlying text being transparent communication, whether it's within board members or whether it is external with the stakeholders, I think that's very, very key learning that, you know, we all take from the way people now are operating at board levels. Okay. And, you know, I was doing a quick search, Sean, on, you know, some of the differentiators that, you know, you stand out with. And I could see that you've been recognized with over 350 awards, including the Best Client Leader of the Year 2015. I know you shared a bit of that in the previous question that I asked you, but to what do you attribute, you know, this recognition, and how does it reflect in your leadership philosophy?
So, Arvind, I'll say that, of course, the 350 awards are all team awards over a period of 2 years. And when I got the client leader award, it was I was leading the GSK account at that time. And I think to answer your question on what led to it and what do I attribute this recognition. So I was saying that at the bedrock of my leadership philosophy is mosaic leadership. And by mosaic leadership, is essentially drawing from the term mosaic, which means that it is made out of smaller pieces, and individually those pieces might not mean anything, but when they're brought together, they create a beautiful picture. So that is what is at the bedrock of my leadership philosophy, and it's essentially a collaborative leadership style. But what we did actively at that point of time was to build a system of trust. And while, you know, most people talk about an interplay in leadership between people, processes, and product, this system of trust was an active initiative right from the beginning. And it was built on, you know, three core pillars. The first one was to actively build trust with the client, which means how do you visualize their big picture? And how do you execute the big picture with meticulous attention to detail? So each and every team member had an idea about the big picture, and then how are we doing our best to make sure that there is attention to detail in everything. And especially digital at that point of time in 2015 was coming up in a big way. So we had to drive digital adoption. Actively make all our client, everybody at the client end understand about digital as a medium. And this brought about 15 times efficiency to the business. So when I'm talking about aiming at profitability, we did add to the top line of the business at that point of time. And the third pillar was around infusing all internal dealings with dignity and respect. This is the human side of all interactions, you know. So usually it, you know, we talk about the combination of people, product and processes, but this was something that I actively built, you know, the system of trust on these three pillars. And we did extremely well when we were on the GSK account. So that's what got me the award, I think.
Amazing, amazing. I think if I look at the underlying theme here, and which is so true for even us, is how do you become so collaborative and truly a team player? Because it's a known fact that together we win. And I think, and you customizing it and becoming part of the entire DNA, I think made you really stand out. That's amazing. Mm. Excellent. So if I move on to the segment of empowerment, and you know, I read a bit about your initiative of Sambala, which is focusing on empowering women through the mandala art workshops, something very unique. So I was a bit intrigued and also very excited to hear from you. I mean, can you tell us a little bit more about this, your mission, which is to enable million women towards personal mastery? I think this is completely unique.
Yeah, Harvin, thank you for that question. My journey since 2010 has been about self-exploration. And I am guided by the philosophy of Ubuntu, which is that I am because we are. I truly believe in this. It drives my vision of success, and I do believe that my personal growth is also coming from uplifting others along the way. So in anything and everything I do, I'm always kind of also looking out for what can I do with the people that are working with me or I'm interacting with in any small way. Most of the time when you talk about women, we live a lot with our subconscious, things that hold us back rather than drive us forward. So nudging them at any stage or talking to them and trying to bring awareness to their things that hold them back is another thing that I do. And when I said that, you know, I have this mission of enabling a million women, it's not like a time-led goal. It's like a life goal. So while I do keep a count of the active workshops that I do to bring them forward, this is something that's a subconscious level of intervention that I keep doing with women around me. Women and men also, but more women. Mandala art actually is very special, and it holds a very special place in my journey, in this journey. So a little bit about mandala art. It's an ancient Buddhist art form that uses symbols to communicate with the soul. Now, you don't need to know the symbols. It's very intuitive, and they talk to you themselves. Even though you don't know the meaning, but when you are faced with a mandala, it will mean something to you because it's talking to your subconscious. So they uncover what is stored in the subconscious, all, especially the limiting beliefs. We don't face ourselves most of the time, you know. We kind of keep living to other people's expectations out of us. So our limiting beliefs are the ones that drive the internal dialogue that we are having with ourselves. Right. And when you are faced with doing a mandala or making a mandala art, I do workshops with women across the world. Actually, now I've even done some in New York. It tells you the story of your inner self at that moment. And when you do that, it's a very powerful tool that helps you to listen to your inner self, you know. And believe me, Arvind, profound self-awareness happens. I have seen people, both men and women, cry when they see their art, when what they have made. And they say, my God, I know I used to think this, but now it's coming out in the open, you know. So through Sambala is the name of my website. My aim is to harness this meditative and revealing nature of mandala art to empower women. And bring out those subconscious blocks that have been there since childhood, especially true for women. I would keep emphasizing on that, and bring those blocks to the surface through this mandala art creation, you know, so that whenever we are trying to overcome them, we know what we are faced with. So in a sense, this is what I do. I mean, how I am envisage enabling of women and million women through the, my life journey. I mean, through the end, till the end of my life, to unlock their potential, to remove their blocks, and you know, help them on their self-discovery process, and empower them, you know, through internal changes. I think that's what this is all about.
Oh man, this is amazing, and I'm truly inspired by I Am Because We Are, and so very powerful, and I think inspiring, and a selfless approach. Very, very inspiring, Sean. So I think given what I just heard, so if I take it to the corporate level, Sean, and in your capacity as an independent director, how do you ensure that diversity and inclusiveness, you know, are prioritized in board discussions and company policies? I mean, you're also a member of the board. I'm not saying that you drive it, but how do you try and ensure the diversity?
So Arvind, I'd like to step back a little bit out here and talk about two types of business builders. Here I won't talk about inclusivity as in women and men, and you know, I think let's talk about business building, because now we're talking about boards, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There are two types of business builders. There is a feudal type and then there is a mercantile type. Okay, feudals look at organizations and brand building and stakeholder satisfaction, employee growth, talent building, you know, market expansion, basically business and people related people. Okay, these are feudal business builders. So they look at running factories well, they look at employee health, safety, etc., etc. Mercantiles are those that are cutthroat interested in building profitability. How do I make money? How do I cut costs? How do I raise prices? Okay, so these are two different, very different types of business builders. And if you understand that, then my approach is that I look at bringing the voice and vote of both people to bring a balance on how the company has to be financially successful. So when I'm sitting in board meetings, I'm actively looking at where the decisions are going and how they are being taken, and whether we are all encompassing between the two types of business building approaches. Because when you're looking at the future of a company, it has to be fused with what is good for the world versus what is also good for the company. So, you know, if we all have to look at a holistic approach, this is what I, this is how I do it.
Basically balancing both, which is so very, very important, correct?
Yeah. Basically, what I'm saying is that when you're looking at inclusivity at the board discussion levels, you can guide the company policies only when you have a mindset which sort of brings in both sorts of business builders, the feudal and the mercantile type. Yeah.
Correct.
So that's how you can guide company policies in terms of future directions. Because at the board level, it's like you have to discuss, you have to influence the management, right? You have to keep an eye on the future of the company and that everybody is satisfied. So you look at a combination of the feudalistic way of making decisions and the mercantile way of making decisions. So that's how diversity comes in.
Hmm. So given that, Sean, can you share an example of how diverse leadership has positively impacted Shalimar Paints or Infra Markets business strategy or outcomes?
Yeah, so between these two companies, if you see, you know, they are very different in terms of where they stand today. Intramarket is a very young company. It's got a young leadership and they use technology. And so there, my wisdom and my experience is what I use to bring about investor confidence and forward thinking. Whereas in Shalimar, you know, it's an iconic, very traditional brand. So I try to bring in the energy of a modern contemporary thinking, marketing processes, new talent that is tech first, you know, because today, you know, you can see your home painted on your screen first also, right? And that's the kind of consumers you're facing. But Shalimar being an iconic traditional brand, you need to kind of refresh that approach to being thinking tech first and modern thinking first. So that's where I bring in the refreshing approach to marketing and the new age consumers and, you know, make them sort of up to speed with processes, etc. So there is a impact on both their businesses and strategy outcomes in both of them.
Okay, okay, very interesting. Interesting. Okay. So, you know, initially, while opening up, I had mentioned a fact about the uneven growth of female directors across companies. So given the position that you hold, Sean, what steps do you recommend, you know, for companies looking to enhance their diversity initiatives and achieve more equitable representation? So if you could share some thoughts, you know, it'll be very interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, Arvind, actually, female independent directors is not going to happen suddenly because the pool of women at senior levels has to have a combination of the ability to ensure governance, but also guide businesses. And this pool is very hard to create. We have to grow it from the bottom, right? We have started on this journey. Actually, organizations like EY and ISB are helping desirous women to come to that position. I'm an outcome of that process as well. And I think more and more women will come, will have to come into this leadership level first and then be guided and coached to be trained directors. So I think it's not going to happen suddenly. It's not like today we have a lot of female independent directors coming in. Especially like we talked about earlier, I mean, that, you know, directors are expected to even contribute to the growth of the company and not just be stature-led, right? So, as you must be aware that 2014, SEBI had a ruling that, you know, we will need to have diversity in the boards and that every 5 years they'll have to roll over. And 10 years later today, that pool of independent women directors has increased since then, because at that point of time, there were very, very few. But today that, you know, we are sitting in 2024 and that pool has definitely increased, I would say. But still, there is a big gap. Okay. And especially because when you go into the depth of it, and now that I have been in this for at least 2 years, I understand that it's got to be both about understanding governance and also understanding business leadership. So that is a very, very hard combination to come by. So there's a lot that needs to be done by the industry and the people who have to adapt to that change. The work has started, no doubt about it. Somewhere, I also think that there is a absorption, awareness, and talking about another concept, which is that the stature of directors helps to bring stakeholder trust, right? The name, experience, their presence, their composition of the director, board of directors, it is all a tool for trust building in stakeholders. And today, I think that has become a very important part, and even stakeholders have a role in the board of directors that are there. So if we are able to bring out the statistics of the fact that when you have women directors on the board, the company is doing better, the performance is better, the way that they deal with the overall growth and corporate governance is a lot better. The diversity actually makes a difference. If we are able to talk more about this thing, then it is also going to help a lot of women to feel more confident about going up to that level on the position. And it's also going to change the mindset of the people around us. So while there's a lot that needs to be done in terms of increasing the pool of women, there is also a mindset change that needs to happen at a overall level when we are talking about board of directors and building shareholder trust of the company.
No, I absolutely agree with you, Sean. The need for talking more about it and a mindset change is required. And you know, I completely concur with you and happy that we also at EY are contributing to the diversity initiative for the corporate India. And hopefully we'll, you know, making that change going forward as well, count more. So Sean, if I were to take an example out of you, especially in companies, you know, where you are currently as directors, are there any one or two measures that you have taken which are effective in promoting inclusiveness?
Arvind, actually, you know, I'll have to answer this question in a little different way, because see, when you're an independent director in large organizations, let's say 3,000 employees, having direct meaningful conversations is a challenge. You know, you'll at best engage with 10 to 12 colleagues and discuss work-related matters 10 to 15 times in a year. So conversations around inclusiveness and equal opportunities is not something that happens actively. But what do I do instead? Because I do recognize the need for having an equal representation, is that I try to make every interaction that I have with people having a lasting impact. Okay, because that's what's going to change the perception about women in leadership positions over time. You know, I also make my presence felt a lot on LinkedIn. I share posts and I participate in forums as much as possible, as a speaker, to inspire others through my own experiences. There is definitely learnings and experiences that can help support other women, because, you know, whatever I have gone through and come to this position today, if I'm able to share that, then what I eventually end up doing is to create what I call replicable paths for future generations. And this is something actually my mother taught me, and I'll share this a little bit with you. When I was going through my own guilt about not being able to give enough to my child, and, you know, she sat me down and she said, Shan, your job is not just about, it's not just for you. It is about every person that you interact with in the future. It is about your daughter as well. It is about every other person that is going to be part of your life. So you need to be thinking of it from that perspective and act as an inspiration, manage your problems and just get on with the act of, you know, being there. So she was my sort of backbone and support, you know. So I think that's where I learned that we need to constantly keep managing our internal dialogues and seeing. So which is what I do with people that I meet. So actually, to be honest, it is only about encouraging women to. And here's an interesting one, Arvind. This is something I tell mostly every woman that I come across. You have to understand the difference between a career path and a job. A job is just a string of jobs that you'll do. A career is something you need to plan for. You know, it's the difference between climbing a ladder consistently versus moving from one stepping stone to another without a clear destination. So if you understand that, if a woman understands that, then the way that she will carve out her future, her career, will be very different. So literally, difference between a career path and a string of jobs is something we need to imbibe. Okay. And I will not be shy in saying one last point here, that we need to be also seen as being deserving the position and not seen as being patronizing, because it's crucial to demonstrate genuine merit and capability in leadership roles. You have to know to earn respect through actions and achievements And not just because you're a woman, you're being put up there, you know. When you're working, you're an equal person. You've got to think of it as equal and therefore be seen as deserving and not patronizing is something I also profess. So I, like I said, there's not much I can do at the board level because the interactions are all business and governance led. But through all the interactions, I am very conscious of the fact that there is inspiration and there is learnings that I can give and impart. So I keep that in mind when I talk to people around me.
I think that's so very true, John. You know, even I have this discussion with my employees that how do you differentiate between a career and a job? I think that's and that's so much to learn there. And the fact that being equal, I think, is so very true for us to be inclusive. I completely agree with you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, we did talk about this, but you know, if I were to go a little bit more granular, Sean, what challenges do you believe still need to be addressed to achieve a more inclusive corporate culture? And I know you didn't mention, but how are you contributing to that change? You did allude to it a bit in your earlier question, but just to be a little bit more granular, I'll ask you again.
Yeah, I mean, the process has just begun. Like I said earlier, you know, we have to make this pipe stronger. And there are multiple challenges. Like at every level, there are challenges. But first, I'd like to talk about the good things. You know, the good things are that there is a changing workplace environment, you know, with the whole work from home and flexible hours and technology being used as an enabler for us to communicate. And I think if we use them well, then women can start coming back to work sooner than later after a small break, you know. So I think the good thing today is that there is much greater enablement that is there in terms of the external environment. For sure, we need better policies for women and companies have to be willing to welcome them back rather than eliminating them that, oh, now, you know, you're getting married or you're getting a baby or you can't do, you know, you can't fulfill your nurturing roles. So now you're not, you know, out. So I think somewhere every company needs to recognize the talent. And if when the woman wants to come back to work, there is to be a policy. I call it welcome them back. But there definitely needs to be policies regarding that. Internally, I think companies need to have take proactive understanding of the and awareness of the issues that women face and how to solve for them.
So in your personal capacity, then how do you mentor or support the development of diverse talent to basically prepare them for, you know, roles in the industry which are in the top positions?
I would say that whenever I spot a talent, a young talent, I actively start paying attention and advise them and groom them. And I try to put them in touch with other successful women leaders as examples. I try to talk about the issues, I solve for them, you know, by networking, getting them good network opportunities, as in placing them in the eyes of other senior people, you know, and those are some of the things that I can actively do because I do feel it's a very, very tough environment because it's not just external, it's also internal. And so therefore, important for me to be able to be there for others. I also feel like, you know, the art of extreme self-care is something that one needs to understand. Self-care is an art. I think the last thing I would say is that when you are a young woman leader or when you are young, when you are in the early years of your career, you must work and work and work without any distraction because that's the time when you're building a reputation for yourself. And this reputation takes you a long way when you want to come back to work, when you're building your repertoire of the kind of you know challenges that you have faced at work, and I mean work challenges, I mean like, you know, things that you have done, the goals that you have achieved. those are the things that you can talk about later on in your mid-career and your final year, I mean, later years of your career. So, you know, actively bring these things out. These are all my learnings, Arvind, that I have tried to talk to you about today, you know, how I have managed my career over the last 32 years. And like I told you earlier, I'm still nowhere close to hanging up my boots. So these are some things that I advise and groom them while they are young.
Amazing. Sean, you know, I've heard you for the last 45 minutes or so, but, you know, your breadth of knowledge and acumen are truly impressive. All I can say is to our listeners is that what you're saying is that build a strong foundation, and to build a strong foundation in a career is so very, very important.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. They will, I'm sure, take a lot from all of this discussion today. So thank you for tuning in. We hope today's episode has been both inspiring and informative for you.
Thank you, Arvind. It's been my pleasure. And I hope that our discussion is going to inspire more women and to chase their dreams, to have a dream, to chase their dreams and to make a difference in their fields that they are in.
Be sure to catch our next episode for Inspiring Voices, a podcast series with influential women leaders, where we will feature more stories of successful women leaders shaping the future. Stay tuned for further empowering stories and invaluable wisdom from these pioneers. Until next time, keep prioritizing your growth, leading with purpose, striving to make a meaningful difference. See you until next time.